Introduction to vascular access devices. Obtaining and retaining reliable vascular access has become one of the most essential concerns of modern healthcare. It is crucial for infusion therapy, which is the administration of fluids and medications from a catheter into a vein. Increasingly, infusion therapy is administered in LTC facilities as opposed to acute care hospital settings. Unfortunately, vascular access is associated with substantial and generally underappreciated potential for producing healthcare-associated infections, particularly bloodstream infections originating from contamination of the device used for vascular access and other injuries arising from medical care. Bloodstream infections, BSIs, are infections in the vascular system, including bacteremia, fungemia, and viremia. The possibility of infection is true across all healthcare settings and is especially important in LTC settings, as the resident population tends to be more susceptible to infections. A vascular access device, VAD, is any device used to access the vascular system for hemodynamic monitoring, medication administration, infusions, blood sampling, or dialysis. VADs may be placed for a short term, usually less than 3 weeks, or a long term, weeks to months, and they may be placed in multiple locations in a patient or resident. Every type of VAD carries some risk of causing BSIs, although the risk level varies depending on the VAD type and insertion location. Note that infections associated with VAD may range from local to systemic. Employers must perform a hazard assessment to determine when and what personal protective equipment, PPE, is necessary when performing a procedure that may result in exposure to blood or other potentially infectious materials. This applies to work with catheters and dialysis, discussed elsewhere. Recommendations vary as to what levels of PPE are necessary for a given procedure, depending on the nature of the procedure and the body producing the recommendation. However, standard precautions must be followed at a minimum. More in-depth explorations of PPE and standard procedures are included elsewhere in this learning system. We will now examine a few types of VADs to better understand the most common forms encountered in the LTC, depicted in Exhibit 1-6, Central Venous Catheters. Peripheral Vascular Devices. Midline Catheters. Peripherally Inserted Central Catheter, PICC, Lines. Tunneled Catheters. Implanted Ports. Exhibit 1-6. Types of VADs. Source, APIC Text, 35, Vascular Access Device-Related Infections, which cites Vineet Chopra et al., the Michigan Appropriateness Guide for Intravenous Catheters, MAGIC, results from a multi-specialty panel using the RAND/UCLA Appropriateness Method. Reprinted with permission. Central Venous Catheters, CVCs, a central venous catheter, CVC, also known as a central line, C-line, is a catheter typically inserted into the neck, chest, groin, or arm that terminates close to the heart or in one of the great vessels. Some of the other VADs discussed in this topic are kinds of CVCs. For example, PICC lines, tunneled catheters, and implanted ports. The CVC is used to quickly deliver fluids, blood, or medications to a patient and can also be used to conduct certain medical tests. A CVC can be left in place for weeks or months, and medication can be administered through them multiple times a day, depending on the illness and treatment regimen. Central line-associated bloodstream infections, CLABSIs, result in thousands of deaths each year and billions of dollars in added costs to the U.S. healthcare system, yet these infections are preventable. The IP must carefully monitor the resident for signs of CLABSI. Peripheral vascular devices. Peripheral vascular cannulation, insertion of a cannula or a small tube into a body cavity, duct, or vessel, is used for drawing blood samples and administering medication, among other things. In long-term care, peripheral vascular devices are inserted into veins, for example, on the back of a resident's hand. Peripheral catheters are typically 3 to 6 centimeters in length, inserted into the peripheral vessels, both arteries and veins, of the upper extremities, and used for short-term infusion therapy. Vein use for peripheral IV therapy is more common in LTC facilities. Longer peripheral catheters may be used when deeper blood vessels must be accessed, although they require specialized imagery during placement and specialized training and competencies. Peripheral VADs are recommended when infusion therapy is 14 days or less in duration. It is believed that the risk of vascular access device-associated BSI is low with peripheral catheters. However, the risk still exists, along with the potential for other complications. Midline catheters. Midline catheters are longer than other peripheral catheters and require the use of specialized imaging techniques, such as ultrasound, to assist with placement. In addition, healthcare personnel who are installing a midline catheter must wear sterile gloves and gowns and a face mask during the procedure. Midline catheters are designed to remain in place up to 30 days, depending on the manufacturer. Peripherally inserted central catheter lines. Peripherally inserted central catheter, PICC, lines are long-term vascular access devices intended for infusion therapy lasting weeks, months, or possibly even years. The catheter lengths are usually 45 centimeters or longer. The catheter is inserted into a peripheral vein of the upper extremities and advanced until the tip lies in the lower one-third of the superior vena cava or cavoatrial junction. Because of tip location, PICC lines are considered central vascular access devices, CVADs, and can accommodate irritant and vesicant infusion therapy, including total parenteral nutrition and antineoplastic chemotherapy infusions. To confirm placement of the PICC line, an ultrasound or chest X-ray may be used. However, it is not always the case that an ultrasound will be available, for example, if PICC insertion is done by a contracted infusion service nurse. Tunneled catheters. A tunneled catheter is surgically inserted into a vein in the chest or neck and then passed under the skin. One end of the catheter comes out through the skin so medicines can be given right into the catheter. There are two kinds of tunneled catheter, cuffed and non-cuffed. The cuffed variety can be used for temporary access beyond 3 weeks. The non-cuffed variety is for emergencies and can be used for up to 3 weeks. Implanted ports. Implanted ports are surgically inserted and tunneled but have no visible catheter at an exit site. Usual placement involves the chest and subclavian or internal jugular veins, but they can also be placed in the upper arm similar to a PICC and in the abdomen or femoral area with the catheter tip in the inferior vena cava at the level of the diaphragm. Implanted ports have the lowest reported rates of vascular access device-associated bloodstream infections, VADA BSIs. Preventing vascular access device-associated bloodstream infections, VADA BSI. Every type of VAD carries some risk of causing a BSI. Additional risk factors associated with the VADA BSI include the resident's age, especially the elderly, and whether the resident is under or malnourished, has severe or multiple underlying conditions, has undergone multiple invasive procedures, or is immunocompromised. Unnecessary VAD use also increases the risk of BSIs. For these reasons, alternatives to VADs should always be considered before using them. Microorganisms gain access to the bloodstream by one of three extrinsic mechanisms. 1. Skin organisms invade the percutaneous tract, probably facilitated by capillary action at the time of insertion or in the days following. 2. Microorganisms contaminate the catheter hub and lumen when the catheter is inserted over a percutaneous guide wire or later manipulated. Or 3. Organisms are introduced to the vascular system by contaminated fluids or medication. An intrinsic mechanism involves organisms that are carried hematogenously to the implanted VAD from a remote source of local infection, such as a pneumonia. Prevention strategies for VADA BSIs can be generalized from various authoritative guidance to include the following recommendations to be followed before, at, and after insertion. Before insertion, determine criteria for site selection. Provide resident/family education. This refers specifically to the insertion, care, and maintenance of VADs, including indications for use, appropriate insertion and maintenance practices, the risk of BSIs, and general infection prevention strategies for VADA BSIs. Use standardized CLABSI insertion kit. Conduct and periodically assess specialized insertion and maintenance education, training, and competencies. Use evidence-based list of VAD indications. Even with the education component described above, recommendations still include the existence of an evidence-based list of indications for use of VADs. This should be included in established organizational policies, procedures, and practice guidelines in accordance with the manufacturer's instructions for use. At insertion, adhere to IPC practices, including educating HCP on indications for intravascular catheter use, insertion and maintenance procedures, and appropriate IPC practices. The existence of infection prevention practices and principles in LTC facilities is crucial. However, the presence of the practices and principles is not enough. The policies must be followed to be effective. While best practices recommend that unnecessary personnel be limited during insertion, recommendations state that a second trained healthcare worker with the power to stop the procedure should be present at all insertions of VADs. Perform HH before and after palpating catheter insertion sites and before and after inserting, replacing, accessing, repairing, or dressing an intravascular catheter. Use aseptic technique. Follow specific guidance on glove use. Example, when clean versus sterile gloves are needed. Use of sterile gloves is recommended for placement of all VAD types except for peripheral 4 catheters, which may use disposable non-sterile gloves if the healthcare worker makes sure not to touch the insertion site again after cleaning the skin in preparation for insertion. Follow site selection recommendations for peripheral or midline catheters, such as for adults/pediatric patients and duration of use. Assessing appropriate sites can help reduce the risk of BSIs. This includes avoiding the use of femoral sites unless necessary for other reasons, as the use of femoral veins has been shown to increase the risk of VADA BSIs. Note that studies have shown certain insertion locations to be less likely to result in BSIs, although due to other factors, they may have similar overall risks to the patient, meaning that there is no true optimal site for insertion if all potential complications are of equal concern. Follow site selection recommendations for CVCs, including weighing risks/benefits, avoiding the femoral vein in adult residents, using a subclavian site in adult residents, with exceptions, such as for hemodialysis residents, using a fistula or graft in certain residents, ensuring that sufficient ports are available for the resident, and removing the device as soon as possible if adherence to aseptic technique cannot be guaranteed. Use catheter carts and all-inclusive kits. The use of a standardized CVAD cart or an all-inclusive kit encourages a consistent, standardized approach to CVAD insertion. Essential supplies such as catheters, guide wires, sterile gloves, drapes, personal protective equipment, and needles are readily available, minimizing interruptions and ensuring maintenance of a sterile field. Use ultrasound guidance as needed, deeper, more difficult to palpate veins. Use of ultrasound to aid in the placement of devices is recommended for certain types of VAD placement. This can help reduce the risk of infection as well as other non-infectious complications while reducing the number of attempts needed for successful placement. Ultrasound guidance should be used by only fully trained healthcare workers. Use maximum sterile barrier precautions. Use of sterile gloves, a long-sleeve sterile surgical gown, mask, cap, and large, sterile full-body drape has been shown to significantly reduce the incidence of BSI during CVAD placement. Recommendations differ for other types of VAD placement. For example, for peripheral arterial cannulation, some sources recommend maximum barrier precautions and others recommend standard barrier precautions. Use proper skin preparation. Solution to use, allowing antiseptics to completely dry. Recommendations vary for skin preparation, with sources alternatively recommending the use of 70% alcohol, tincture of iodine, greater than 0.5% chlorhexidine, or other alternatives depending on the type of insertion and whether there are any contraindications for use. However, regardless of the antiseptic used, it is recommended that the antiseptic agent be allowed to dry completely prior to insertion. After insertion, ensure appropriate nursing staff levels. A proper nurse-to-patient ratio helps reduce the incidence of BSIs, according to several studies. Disinfect catheter hub before accessing. Recommendations state that catheter hub should be disinfected prior to every access, as colonization of catheter hubs is thought to cause 50% of post-insertion VADA BSIs. However, studies are ongoing as to the optimal scrub time, which has led to difficulty in establishing a standardized best practice recommendation. Currently, recommendations state that scrubbing should be done for no less than 5 seconds. Daily assessment of need for catheter by palpation. Remove non-essential catheters. As risk of VADA BSI exists whenever VADs are in place, it is recommended that reviews be undertaken daily as to whether each line currently in place is necessary. Those that are unnecessary should be removed promptly. This decision may be based on the existence of mechanical complications, the cessation of use of the catheter, or other criteria. However, they should not be removed based solely on dwell time. Remove catheter if the resident develops signs of phlebitis, infection, or a malfunctioning catheter. Follow VAD dressing regimens or care bundles. Regular changing of dressings. Every 2 days for sterile gauze. Every 7 days for sterile transparent, semi-permeable dressings. Or sooner if either type is no longer dry or intact, can help reduce VADA BSIs. Skin preparation with use of greater than 0.5% chlorhexidine with alcohol is recommended, as long as such preparation is compatible with the catheter material for dressing changes. As with some recommendations for during insertion, use of barrier precautions varies. Replace administration sets and add-on devices within specified times. Minimizing the use of add-on devices such as extension sets, needleless connectors, and secondary sets helps reduce the potential for secondary infections. Add-on devices used with systems for continuous infusions, closed systems, do not need to be changed as often as those used in systems with intermittent infusions, open systems. Perform skin decolonization with chlorhexidine. Evidence supports the use of chlorhexidine bathing in all patients with a VAD. Chlorhexidine is available in multiple forms, so it is important to follow the manufacturer's instructions for use. Use topical antimicrobial ointments for hemodialysis catheters. Generally speaking, topical ointments are not recommended for use with most VADs, as they may promote fungal infections and antimicrobial resistance. However, in situations related to hemodialysis, their use may be recommended. Perform surveillance. Depending on the location of the facility, VADA BSI surveillance may be required under state laws. Where it is not legally required, it is still a recommended practice. Surveillance processes can be enhanced through the use of electronic healthcare software, eliminating time spent on manual tracking and auditing procedures. Dialysis. Dialysis, the mechanical removal of excess fluid, electrolytes, metabolic waste, and toxins that would normally be cleared by the kidneys, has been the foundation of an initial choice for treating end-stage renal disease, ESRD. The process uses osmosis, diffusion, and ultrafiltration to reduce the body's metabolic waste. Dialysis cannot cure kidney failure. Lifelong treatment is needed to maintain normal fluid and electrolyte balance. There are two main types of dialysis: hemodialysis, HD, which achieves the removal of fluid, electrolytes, waste, and toxins by passing a patient's blood through a hemodialyzer. This usually requires patients to receive treatment for 2 to 4 hours 3 times per week. Peritoneal dialysis, PD, which achieves the same outcome by diffusion through the peritoneal membrane. This may take several different forms and may require the continuous or intermittent presence of dialysate in the abdominal cavity. Infection, especially BSI, is a major cause of mortality among hemodialysis patients, second only to cardiovascular disease. IPs working in LTC facilities need to have a basic understanding of dialysis in order to develop policies and procedures that protect the LTC's susceptible population from infection. Residents with ESRD are at greater infection risk due to the following factors: short and long-term vascular access resulting in endogenous bacteria potentially invading the bloodstream, multiple frequent encounters with the healthcare environment, such as the hospital or dialysis center, that result in increased exposure to multi-drug-resistant organisms, frequent exposure to other patients and healthcare personnel that may result in person-to-person infectious agent transmission, exogenous pathogen exposure from contaminated sources, example, hands of healthcare personnel, equipment, or supplies, comorbidities, example, diabetes. Residents with chronic kidney disease and their families should be educated on the importance of infection prevention strategies, including maintaining the hemodialysis catheter, hand hygiene, and vaccination. Regulations regarding dialysis are very detailed and prescriptive. Attention must be paid to these regulations, including awareness of any changes, in order to provide residents with proper care. In addition to the aforementioned education of residents and their families, risk of infection and adverse reactions for those on dialysis can be reduced by strict adherence to aseptic techniques during all dialysis procedures. Strict adherence to procedures for the use, disinfection, and maintenance of equipment. Knowledgeable, well-trained staff that understand the implications of deviating from established procedures. Careful monitoring of all procedures in which bacterial or chemical contamination can occur. routine monitoring and follow-up of patients undergoing dialysis, including an active infection surveillance and prevention program. Many infection risks associated with dialysis are the same as those detailed in the discussion of VADs. One difference is the use of antibiotic ointments. A povidone-iodine ointment has been shown to decrease the incidence of subclavian-associated sepsis in dialysis. Recommendations also provide for the use of this ointment at the catheter exit site if the ointment does not interact with the material of the catheter. Temporary and short-term dialysis. Temporary dialysis employs the use of CVCs and is indicated when there is an emergent dialysis treatment need or when waiting for the permanent dialysis vascular access port to heal. Infection risk varies based on a multitude of factors, including type of device, location of device, method of placement technique, infection prevention practices, including maintenance and access techniques. Recommended strategies for infection prevention include hand hygiene and aseptic techniques, maximum sterile barrier precautions, skin preparations, and catheter site dressing regimens. Short-term dialysis requires the use of a temporary dialysis access catheter in the jugular, subclavian, or femoral veins. Infection risks associated with this will be similar to risks posed by other catheters placed for short-term use described elsewhere. Long-term dialysis. Long-term dialysis requires an arteriovenous, AV, fistula or graft. AV fistulas are generally preferred because they last the longest, have the best performance, and are less prone to infection and clotting. To create a fistula, an artery and a vein are artificially joined to allow arterial blood to flow through the vein, which causes the vein to enlarge and the vessel wall to thicken. These take a few months to heal and function properly. Temporary dialysis is used in the interim. Care must be taken to keep the fistula site clean and avoid procedures that may increase infection risk or otherwise slow the healing process. Steps and precautions to that end will be included in postoperative directions following the installation of the fistula. AV grafts are similar to AV fistulas but are used when patients have veins that will not develop into a suitable fistula. These may be biologic, semi-biologic, or prosthetic and function to join an artery and a vein, as is done with an AV fistula. The graft is surgically implanted under the skin in the arm in an outpatient procedure. Recovery and maturation of the graft is typically faster than with an AV fistula, 3 to 6 weeks. As mentioned before, these generally do not last as long as AV fistulas, and complications resulting from infection may be more severe due to risk of disintegration of graft materials and subsequent bleeding.